español, español, español.
Leading the conversation on the global game. This is World Football at the Women's World Cup from the BBC World Service.
Spain have won the World Cup at only their third World Cup. A team apparently riven by mistrust and discontent has prevailed over the entire world. Hello, I'm Manny Jasmi. Welcome to our final episode. I'm standing outside Stadium Australia, where Spain have just added a star to their women's shirt. For Andres Iniesta 2010, read Olga Carmona 2023 as the winning goal scorer. At the age of 23, Carmona was given the responsibility of captaining the team in the World Cup final, and she capped that with a memorable goal. Her life will never be the same again. As I've said in the past, standing outside Stadium Australia, the fans tend to sprint for the train, but I'll try and stop a few of them for a chat.
I'm so happy. Spain is the best. I'm here because I need to improve my English, but Spain, the best. We are the best.
What did you like most of all about that performance?
Oh my God, because Spain is the best team, the best match. We are like, I don't know, because I'm nervous. I can say nothing. I'm like, oh my God, we are the best. I'm sorry, I don't have nothing more to say. I'm so proud of Spain. It's the best, I'm sorry.
I'm Australian, obviously. I've got quite an Australian accent. But I was in Spain for 7 years and my wife is Spanish as well. So, yeah. I think what I really enjoyed is that they played without getting too dirty. I think they played gracefully. They played beautifully. It was beautiful passing, beautiful everything. And just the attacks were buenísimo, fantastic. Women's football isn't that well followed in Spain, quite frankly. I hope this gives it a bit of a lift. I think Australia, we're kind of starting to pick it up a bit here, but I hope that Spain starts to pick it up a bit too.
For me, it's about seeing women playing a sport that it has been traditionally played by men. That's what it is. To be honest, I'm very happy to see Spain winning, but if it had been another team, I'll be happy as well. It has been just great to see so much attention to this sport. As I said, it's normally played by men.
In terms of simplistic things, Spain winning the World Cup, how does that feel?
It feels great. I'm from Spain. I live in Australia. I have been living in Australia for a while now. So for me, it's kind of like having a bit of it's being a bit closer to Spain again, being so far away from home. So it's just great. And obviously, seeing the girls that they win for the first time a World Cup, I just feel very proud for them. It's great to have them on this part of the world. It's great to see them play so well. But I never expected to get to the final. And now the fact that they won, it's just amazing. It's great.
Well, inside the media centre at Stadium Australia, I'm with Maz and Katie. But before we get into the final, let's hear from Madrid, from celebrations in Madrid. The BBC's Sergi Forcada watched the game with fans.
Yeah, so and I was in the stadium where 6,000 fans, some of them included, were gathered for the final. I have to say that at the beginning there were quite a lot of nerves, but as soon as Olga Carmona scored the goal and put Spain as leading the match, I have to say that the vibe was more relaxed, more like what we're seeing here, kind of like a party atmosphere. But for some of them, the end of the game was very long. I've been speaking to some people who were following the match earlier, and they said, look, the last 10 minutes were too long. We just wanted the match to end because that meant that they would be World Cup winners.
So great joy in Madrid. We're joined by someone who's slightly less happy, the former England goalkeeper, Karen Bardsley. Hi, Karen. Nice to meet you. Thanks very much indeed for your time. We'll inevitably come on to England, but let's talk about the world champions, shall we, first? What impressed you the most about Spain?
Yeah, you know, they were exquisite tonight, I think. You know, they executed their game plan so well, and it was so clear to me to see that in the first half they understood that they had so much opportunity to attack space on the flanks, you know, the wide channels just outside the likes of Alex Greenwood and Jess Carter on the right, you know, so they were just attacking that area, getting their fullbacks forward, creating 2v1s, 3v2s down the wide areas. And England were really just struggling. But I have to give credit to, you know, Jenny Hermoso, Atayana Bonmati, you know, Teresa Abiera. They were just fantastic in that Spanish midfield and really just pulled the strings tonight.
Bonmati, who has been named player of the tournament. Jorge Vilda, the Spanish coach, named his team 2.5 hours before kickoff. And he said that they would play like this yesterday. Supremely confident in his players.
Yeah, indeed. I was quite shocked, to be fair, when I saw that the team sheet had come out so early, because I was just going through some of my preparations and I thought, I don't trust that this is correct. I think this might be a mind game. And lo and behold, it was. And I thought, my goodness, you know, that says a lot about their preparedness and their game plan and how much belief they have going into this final. And it certainly it proved worthwhile, because they were absolutely outstanding tonight.
And the big talking point, of course, was the fact that they did go with Salma Parayuelo, who was brilliant. You know, we were thinking, she's 19 years old. This is a huge occasion. How would she handle the pressure? She's displaced the Ballon d'Or winner in Alexia Putellas to the bench. And she absolutely was brilliant, wasn't she?
She was, Maz. You're right. I mean, Putellas hasn't really been the player that we're used to seeing, you know, before her ACL injury. And, you know, frankly, I was a bit surprised that she had actually made the squad, because it was pretty soon, you know, in terms of her recovery. You know, we saw the likes of Vivian Miedema, Beth Mead still back at home. Leah Williamson obviously suffering an ACL injury as well. And I think you have to be really careful on a global stage, because obviously the competitive level internationally is going to go through the roof, isn't it? So the demands on the player, the knee, the injury, so on and so forth are going to be even heightened. But, you know, it puts the player in a difficult position, I think, when, you know, you have the heights reached by Alexia Putellas in the previous years, and then suddenly that level of expectation, you know, is there. And it's frustrating as a player not to be able to kind of live up to that expectation. But, you know, someone who certainly has lived up to the hype was Sarah Parayuelo as well. And Salma Parayuelo. I don't even know how to encapsulate all of those skills and the technical qualities and the things that she does. But
at 19 as well, yeah, which is scary.
It's frightening. I mean, she's absolutely rapid. Let's just start there. You know, so if you're a defender and you're just thinking, oh my goodness, I'm in a foot race with someone who used to run the 200 and 400, you know, meter. Oh gosh, you know, she's a fantastic athlete. And then you add in the fact that she's got a fantastic technical ability. She's got a wicked left and right foot. You think, what is there anything this girl can't do? And then, you know, she's got the technical and tactical, tactical intelligence to kind of understand where the spaces are, like just terrorize the back line. And the way she was running at Millie Bright, or off the shoulders, you know, of Millie Bright today, she was just such a threat. And then Spain just adds so much versatility in the attack from every single position. It was just difficult to watch, frankly.
England have managed to overcome several problems during this tournament and before, with injuries and the way that matches have gone, and just hanging in there. Why couldn't they do that today?
Well, maybe, you know, we were talking about this earlier. Was it kind of one too many? You know, like The fact that they've overcome the injury, I think the Lioness has certainly exceeded a lot of expectations around getting to the final. You know, I thought after they beat Colombia, they beat Australia, I thought, right, one more big push and you're there. But, you know, at that time, England hadn't really been tested in the same way tactically as, you know, some of the other teams in the tournament had. And, you know, yeah, I don't know if it was just kind of an individual matchup. I think maybe too many players just had a bit of an off day, you know, and just kind of didn't show the calmness and the, you know, performance that we're used to seeing. But overall, Spain were just so good and so disruptive that it made it difficult for England to find any rhythm.
And the attitude of both teams, especially at the start when it was pretty even until Lauren Hemp hit the bar, the attitude of just going for it, not what you see in any final, really, but especially the World Cup final. What do you think was behind that? Was it because they were both in it for the first time? Or do you think it was the whole tournament that fed into that into that mindset and gave us such an enjoyable final?
I think if you look at kind of the preview in general, you would say that this game was always going to be balanced on a knife edge, you know, and that even people were having a really difficult time in terms of understanding what the percentages from Spain or from England would be to win this game. So whether, yeah, it just kind of, I don't know, for me when I was watching it, I just thought both teams were really just trying to figure out what, like, feel each other out. Like, both teams were just kind of probing, trying to understand what their game plan was, how things would react, and how teammates and players would react in certain types of situations and respond. And it kind of wasn't until, yeah, that, I don't know, that Lauren Hemp effort off the crossbar, it just seemed to really wake Spain up and just kind of, like, unleash this beast.
Well, Karen, you and myself and Manny were up in the stands watching this. Katie Smith, you were watching it from a very different viewpoint, the goal that Spain were defending in the second half.
Yeah, I've just hot-footed it up from a FIFA lockdown. I won't go into detail, not very pleased with them. Yeah, they wouldn't let me go back to my position after I nipped out to the toilet for, after what, 4 hours of duty? Come on. Anyway, that's a whole other story for a whole other episode.
That's another letter we can write to Gianni Infantino about that.
I can confirm, though, what Karen was saying in terms of I was stood behind the goal and watching Parayuelo bearing down on Mary Earps. I mean, I was terrified and I had nothing to do except just hide behind my hands. I wonder, let's talk about Earps' performance then in general. Although, I don't know what I've missed. So you're nodding, Karen, so we haven't covered that yet. Of course, you're a former keeper with the Lionesses yourself. She was so brilliant in that match, I thought.
Yeah, she was. And she was over the course of this entire tournament. If you think back, you know, the first game, you know, she kept England in it with that huge foot save, you know. And again, against Denmark, like, she was absolutely massive for England. And without her, this could have been a completely different conversation that we've been having right now. But yeah, I mean, listen, she made some big saves early on, you know, some off a few deflections as well, mind you. So, like, from a balance and a performance perspective, they were fantastic technical saves. But also just her presence in general, her decision making for me on the whole was good pretty much the entire game. Her, like I said, her presence, the way she was dominating the area. But for me, that penalty save just kind of summed, you know, who she is up. Like, the mentality that this squad have, the mentality that she has in particular. She did her research. You could see that she knew exactly where Hermoso was going to go. She moved a bit early, gambled a bit. But, yeah, she made the save in the end and got a whole body behind it. And for me, you know, it was an opportunity and momentum, wasn't it? You could feel the shift in the crowd. The energy started to build. And then suddenly, you know, Alex Greenwood went down a little bit, kind of took the steam out of that momentum. And then, yeah, the Spanish side were clever in how they managed, you know, their little injuries or their little fouls and kind of just managed the game a little bit better than England did.
And how did you read their body language on the podium afterwards when they had those silver medals put around their neck? Because I was, as we all do, trying to study it. There weren't that many tears. There was a lot of obviously devastated faces. And then I panned round to look at the fans behind me, and they were all still so happy. They'd stuck around to watch it. It didn't feel like heartbreak. It felt perhaps that...
Oh, no, you're completely disagreeing with me. You tell me. What do I know?
They will have been absolutely heartbroken. I mean, they have been so disappointed because, let's be honest, like, they are winners, these Lionesses, you know. They've got a taste of it. They have that mentality, you know, and they would have prepared and what they felt would have been to cover every single possibility, you know. But at the end of the day, I think obviously the players will say that this is just football and sometimes it goes your way and sometimes doesn't. And the Lionesses unfortunately didn't execute today, and then, you know, Spain did. They took their opportunity and absolutely ruthless with it. So yeah, for me, I think there will be disappointment. It's going to take a long time to get over. Like, I think these players are going to have to go away and just kind of reflect and take some time. And I think the clubs are going to have to appreciate that because, you know, the expectation these girls put on themselves to be the best, to be the winners that they are, to inspire those people in the stands that are so proud of their England players. That takes a lot of effort, not only on the pitch, but off it as well. So I think when they do look at this in a few weeks' time, you know, particularly Mary Earps, who's won, you know, the Golden Glove, she probably will feel a sense of pride, but not yet.
So inevitably then, you know, we think about what is next, you know, for this England team. As you say, the next few weeks will be tinged massively with disappointment. But then what do they look to next? And crucially, do we think Serena Wiegmann is going to be the coach with them as they build towards that next tournament? Because she has shown again at this World Cup what a brilliant head coach she is really in global sport, not just in women's football, not just in football.
Yeah, I mean, I think hopefully the first thing for these girls is to get a bit of a break, you know, so hopefully they'll all go on holiday for a bit and maybe switch off, but then it's straight back into the domestic season, isn't it, in October. So, you know, they'll have one eye on recovering and going again. But, you know, on the international front, I mean, do we count, you know, the Olympics? Do we count the Nations League and those qualifiers? Because, frankly, that's coming around, what is it, the 22nd of September.
Yeah.
And that's not much recovery time,
is it? And European Champions League qualifiers as well for some of these Manchester United and Arsenal players.
Exactly. So I think it's savage, you know, the fact that they have to recover in that way and kind of go again. You know, I personally wouldn't be stoked with that if I was still playing, but that's why I'm not. My legs are falling off. So, but yeah, you know, in terms of Serena Wiegmann and her future, like, she's a phenomenal person, a phenomenal manager, you know, she, in every sense of the word, you know, she gets to know the person in order to allow the player to kind of thrive. And, you know, wherever she chooses that direction to be, I hope it's still with England. Like, I'm sure she'll do very, very well. And I have an inkling, well, not an inkling, but a feeling that I'm sure the US will be knocking on her door sooner rather than later. But the FA are incredibly happy with her, and maybe this will spark another, I don't know, fire in her to kind of go again and make another big effort at it.
What about Spain, especially their players who are at Barcelona, multiple Champions League winners, now world champions? Where do they go from here?
Up, I guess.
Where's left?
Where is up? Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? It speaks a lot to, you know, the development at the club level domestically in Spain, you know, obviously with the investment in the youth talent pathways that are coming through the ranks there, you know, how they're feeding into the youth national team and how they're feeding into the senior side. It's difficult to say, obviously, again, you know, the Olympics, the next iteration of the Euros, and then that next four-year cycle for the World Cup. They have so much youth in that squad, and we're talking about, you know, the likes of Salma Perriuelo and, was it 19 years
19.
Old? Like, she's got plenty of time left. So I imagine, you know, we'll see a lot of, maybe not winners' medals, but we'll probably see them hopefully pick up some more medals in the future, because they're a fantastic side and they play beautiful football.
And she's won the under-17s, under-20s, and now the Senior World Cup. Astonishing, and she's not even 20 yet. Aside from the game, the final, have you enjoyed the tournament?
Oh, I've absolutely loved it. I think, you know, we've had so many ups and downs, you know, so many upsets. It's been absolutely tremendous. And for me to see the personal journey of the Lionesses and how they've improved and how they've adapted and how they've gotten themselves to a final, I've really enjoyed that. But, you know, to see them playing with the freedom, the enjoyment for me is probably the most important piece. You know, they're handling the pressure of being winners exceptionally well. But, you know, to see the likes of Germany go out to Colombia, to see the U.S. knocked out by Sweden, there's a huge shift on the horizon, you know, in terms of women's football. And, you know, and then the cultural impacts of, you know, what's going on with women's sports as well. It's such an exciting time. So, yeah, a long answer to your question is I've certainly enjoyed it. It's been a tremendous couple of weeks, yeah.
Karen Barsley, thank you very much for your time. On a difficult, disappointing night for you as a former Lioness, I suppose once a Lioness, always a Lioness. Thank you very much for your time.
That's right. Thanks, Manny.
Today and in previous episodes of this podcast, and safe journey home.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Appreciate that. Same to you guys.
So as we near the end of our final podcast, let's have some reflections on the tournament. I think everyone agrees that the tournament's been great, but let's have some specific moments. Katie, what was your highlight?
I think the moment that Colombia beat Germany, and that was here in Sydney, but in a different stadium. And I think it was my first introduction to the Colombian fans, who were epic. I think it was the flavour of what this World Cup was all going to be about, the upsets, the never giving up. And also just this realisation that there are so many teams in the 32 now that can challenge, and world rankings basically mean nothing. Germany let us down. No, that's not a real takeaway. But just that moment, I think it was something like the 94th minute and Venegas scoring that header, and it just brought the house down. And that was just pure elation, and it was just a magical moment. That to me was my take home.
What about you, Maz, in the freezer of New Zealand?
You know, it's funny what Katie says there. How much should people talk about in the build-up to this World Cup of the 32 nations, how some of them who were sort of earlier on their football journey, if you like, might struggle. We might see some really one-sided scores. And I think every single team that's competed at this World Cup has brought something, brought an element, brought something unique to this tournament. And I've absolutely loved that. I'm going to go as well with an underdog kind of upsetting a former world champion, if you like, in New Zealand against Norway, the opening game of the tournament at Eden Park.
That really set the tone, didn't it?
It did, and it was a day, obviously, that started very differently with that shooting in Auckland, which was just around the corner from our hotel where myself and producer Tom were staying in Auckland. So we were doing an awful lot earlier on the day around that and the news of that shooting. Obviously, the match then went ahead, but there was a bit of a flat atmosphere heading into it, and I think we were worried that if New Zealand didn't put on that performance, it wouldn't be the start to this biggest ever Women's World Cup tournament that we would perhaps hope for. But how wrong we were when the Hannah Wilkinson goal went in. The place just erupted, and everywhere you looked, even really the Norwegian journalists, everybody had a smile on their face because it was just such a special moment. The players were so excited. Unfortunately, New Zealand then obviously not able to get over the line and make the last 16. But it set the tone, as you say, Manny, like a moment of history. And how many times have we said that at this World Cup? Moments of history just populating the tournament throughout the nearly 6 weeks.
I've thought of more as well.
Oh, she's got more than one.
Am I allowed anymore?
Go on then.
Okay, no, I was just going to say some epic penalty shootouts. The fact that I was there for the USA penalty shootout where they were beaten by Sweden. We had VAR to decide the decider. Megan Rapinoe missed a penalty, which is almost unheard of. That was the last kick of her World Cup career, potentially an international career as well with the USA. And then we thought penalties couldn't get any better. And that's where I hand over to you, Mr. Manny Jasmine.
Oh, wow. Absolutely sensational in Brisbane. And I think it actually helped that it was quite warm. And for some reason, drama feels more dramatic when it's warm than when it's cold.
But here we go.
That was amazing. I mean,
what a point.
It does. It
Please
does.
Elaborate. Know what the point of that supposed point is.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, it was a warm day in Brisbane. Great city, by the way. But that penalty shootout, I mean, there was a time when I just thought, do either of these teams actually want to win this game? But Mackenzie Arnold, bless her, saved four penalties, really, and hit the post with her own penalty, which would have won it if she'd scored. That will live long in the memory. That was my highlight. What about goals of the tournament? Katie, goal of the tournament, or 10 if you like?
Should I do a countdown 10 to 1? Do you know what? I might go back to the Germany-Colombia game, the Linda Caicedo goal, which was the first goal that Colombia scored in that match, but it was her second of the tournament. And we've talked about amazing teenage performers on this stage. She's only 18. That was gorgeous. Left-hand side, it probably helped that I was right there watching by that end, by the goal, and left-hand side, and just slots it in. At the near post, just a moment of magic. And then I would say a similar one from Lauren James against I can't even think who it was now. China? Yeah. Denmark, thank you. I'm getting help from the crowd now. Lauren James, who I felt had a slightly redemptive moment in a sense in the final. I thought she played really well tonight as well.
I'm going to go with, probably no shock, Salma Pariuelo's winner against the Netherlands in added time. That was an unbelievable goal in Wellington, because also as well just demonstrating at that point her pace, picking up the ball as she did pretty much on the halfway line, running at pace down the left hand side, but then the composure of the finish into the corner to find the corner was just one really that you just don't really expect to see from a 19-year-old in such a big moment in added time in a knockout game at a World Cup. That's when she really announced herself on the world stage, and I am convinced, and we've been talking about it throughout this pod and throughout this tournament, that she is going to be a name, she is going to be a player that we're going to be talking an awful lot more about down the years.
Finally, both of you were at the World Cup in 2019. How In which ways was this World Cup different, Katie?
The crowds were certainly an obvious change. I think there were some decent moments for us, Maz, when we were mostly based in Grenoble. I think we went to Lyon as well, didn't we, in Montpellier. The crowds were so invested here, and they felt so much more international. And I think the wave of the Matildas' momentum added so much to the tournament here. I think the home success, and just in a way that the French organisers, I don't think ever quite... It felt like they never quite fully believed in what the tournament could be 4 years ago. And I think we've really seen it. And, of course, in New Zealand, and Maz can talk more about that. And I think it's... For me, it's just the pure... football. We don't talk, of course there's issues off the pitch, but we don't talk so much in those terms of, oh, well done, you know, well done the women, great game, oh, you know, look how fast they can run, and look how well they can pass the ball, which is, you know, it wasn't too long ago that we did actually talk in those sorts of terms. So for me it was about the actual football and just being able to enjoy some brilliant matches and some brilliant moments.
Yeah, I agree, and it kind of touches again on the point that I sort of made a couple of minutes ago, that the concern really about the 32 nations, but the fact that every single team here has had a memorable moment. Every game has been memorable for different reasons, for good reasons, for positive reasons, and you take something away from every match. You know, Katie said it earlier in the tournament that at the final round of group games, there were many really 4 years ago where there wasn't so much riding on them, but it felt like everything had something riding on this, everybody coming out with a positive story, as I say. And for me, I guess the big thing is that you've seen this kind of as a gradual increase over the last couple of seasons. You know, I cover a lot of the Women's European Champions League, been lucky enough to be at camp now for one of their record-breaking crowds that they had there, full capacity crowds for Barcelona women in Europe. And it did feel like the momentum was building in a way towards this World Cup that we didn't have over the last couple of years, because honestly, of course, the coronavirus pandemic did affect women's sport more than it affected men's sport. That's a fact, and not just in football, but in other sports as well. But it's recovered, it's been building, and this is a culmination of a couple of years of real hard work from different stakeholders in the game. It's been fabulous. There is still more work to do going forward, but I'm just so excited that we only have a couple of weeks to wait until we're talking about European Champions League qualifiers and then the inaugural UEFA Nations League as well. The work doesn't stop now.
Maz,
that's why I love it.
Stop it. I'm going on holiday. I will not be talking about that.
I can't wait for football in a couple of weeks. I'm looking forward to seeing all these players and talking about all these players.
Come on, Manny, you're not really looking forward to, are you?
Well, I had the... had the pleasure of listening back to one of the games from this weekend's Premier League.
Yeah, we both won this week, don't you worry?
Went rather well. Anyway, it's time to say thank you. Thank you to all of the people who gave us their time, the players, the fans, the journalists and others, to give us their opinions and insight. A huge thank you to Craig Wall, Tom Payton and Peter Victor, who in their different ways have been absolutely integral to these podcasts happening. And thanks back at base to Ryan, Joe, Adam, Natalia, Sam, Christian, Matt, and many others I'm sure that I've forgotten off the top of my head, because they've put up the podcast so that you've been able to listen. And the biggest thanks of all to you for listening. But that's it from the Women's World Cup, the 9th edition. The next one will be the big 1-0. But for now, from Sydney, it's goodbye.
See you in 2027.
Can't wait.
World Football at the Women's World Cup is a BBC Sport production from the BBC World Service.